I have a sobriety date. It's January 15th of 2014. I have a sponsor, and she knows she's my sponsor, and she's here with me. And she has taken me through all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have had the honor and privilege of taking other women through the steps as well. I have a home group. It is the it is in Pasadena, Maryland. It's at 8 o'clock. It's called the McAfee 12 and 12. So if you're ever in Pasadena, Maryland, we'd love to have you. It's a Steps and Traditions meeting. So I'll just proceed. Well, from a very young age, I always felt different and very out of place. You hear that a lot in the rooms, and that I definitely did. I even felt out of place around my family. Even though, you know, I was always around my family, and I always felt like that there was something wrong or something different. For a while, I was convinced that possibly they grabbed the wrong kid from the hospital because things that just did not even seem right. For a long time, I had trouble connecting with people. I was a train wreck when I was growing up. I had a huge gap that you could probably put your thumb through. I had big, frizzy hair. I had warts all over my face, and I was just awkward and didn't know how to talk to anybody. And it's really difficult when you're a kid and you look different from everybody, and they point it out, and you know you look, and you definitely feel different. But I did not know that that was, I didn't know that was alcoholism. I just thought I was an extremely weird kid. And even socializing in school, there was no, I really didn't know how to get along with anybody. I was either in your face and trying to listen to the music that you really liked, or just trying to get you to like me for a really long time. So, and people always thought that I was weird and I was always trying too hard. That's because I was. I would remember there would be days in school where I'd hear kids talk about like the newest music. And I think like back in middle school, like Alanis Morissette was really popular. So I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home and I'm going to learn every single lyric from Jagged Little Pill. So when I hear everybody talking about it tomorrow, I'll know exactly what everybody's talking about. And that conversation never came up. I really learned to like her music a lot. And I did a lot of theater when I was in school. It's weird because I really loved being up there with the spotlight to being the center of attention. But then again, I didn't like it. It was really strange. And I grew to realize that I really enjoyed doing theater because for that, you know, 1 hour or 45 minutes or whatever it was, like, I got to play a different character. I got to be somebody else. And for the longest time, that's all I wanted to be, was somebody else. I wanted to be the girl who had, like, the platinum blonde hair and the blue eyes, and that she developed early and she was a cheerleader and everybody really liked her and she had the boyfriend and her parents had all the money and all that great stuff. And my parents did a really great job of providing for me. I never went hungry. I had clothes on my back. I had a home, you know, but whatever my parents gave to me was never good enough, you know. So basically that just continued for a really long time. I remember growing up at a very young age and being enamored with alcohol. My dad drank, and it was weird because when he drank, he got scary. So I was kind of scared of alcohol for a while. But I remember when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, I went to this wedding in New York, and, you know, I'm Italian, so there's like 500 people there, and we love to drink, so there's a bar in every corner, and it's just crazy, and everybody's dancing and having a good time. And I remember just walking up to one of the bartenders, and I was like, can I get a whiskey and sour? Didn't know what whiskey was. Didn't know anything. I just walked up to him, and I don't know, like, everybody was having such a great time. Like, I really wanted to know what all this was about. And whatever was coming out of those bottles was definitely, you know, it was, like, what was going on. And I don't know what made me think about whiskey, but that followed me for a really long time. Of course, my parents weren't really happy about that. They were like, what's your problem? Why are you going to the bartender and ordering alcohol? I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. They're like, what's wrong with you? That seems to be like a thing that happens throughout my life. People keep on asking me, what's your problem? And I don't really know how to tell you. I feel dead inside. I feel dead inside, and I'll do anything that you want for your attention and for your love, and I don't feel good about myself. And every time I look in the mirror, I hate exactly what I see. If you tell people that, they're going to think you're crazy. So, you know, I just kept all that bottled inside for a really long time. And then I discovered Jack Daniels, and that all changed for me. Jack and I ran around together for a real long time and was my best friend for 11 years. But I remember the first time I consumed alcohol, it was Christmas time. I ended up having like this big fight with my mom. I still don't remember what it was about. It was probably her trying to like teach me how to be responsible and be a nice person, but I wasn't really trying to hear any of that because I was 18 and I was grown up and I knew everything about the world, and you know how we are when we're teenagers, we know everything. And we got into a big fight, and I was like, that's it, I'm leaving, you're ruining my life, I'm sick of all these rules. So what I did, I hooked up with some guy who really liked me, but I could care less about, you know, how he felt about me, and I ran off with him. So I left the comfort of my own home to go live with a guy in his basement, in his mom's basement, with no job, and because I didn't want to live under anybody's rules, and I didn't want to be told what to do. You couldn't tell me what to do regardless. So 2 weeks before Christmas, and, you know, we went out and got a Christmas tree, and he's like, hey, you want to stop by the liquor store? And I was like, yeah, I don't really know about that because I see the way alcohol affects my dad, and I was like, I'm kind of scared. I was scared of it, but I wanted to try it all at the same time. And he's like, eh, what's the worst that's going to happen? We're going to decorate the Christmas tree. You won't have to drive anywhere. You can stay indoors. And famous last words is, what's the worst that could happen? 10 years of ripping and roaring and like blowing through people's lives, but I didn't predict that coming. So I remember taking that shot of Jack, and I just remember feeling this most amazing feeling I've never felt in my whole entire life. I felt my whole body relaxed. I felt the warm sensation tingle my entire body from my fingers to my feet. I just relaxed, and I didn't worry about what I said, and for some reason people like laughed at my jokes, and I thought that was great. And you know, and that's all I remember, was cracking a joke and taking a shot, and that was it. Apparently, I blacked out, and I woke up the next day, and, you know, everybody asked me if I was okay, and I was like, not really, I feel like crap, but I wanted to do it again as soon as possible. Everybody was like, oh, you were amazing, you were running around singing, we never seen you so happy in your life, and I was kind of bummed that I wasn't there to experience, like, this awesome person that I was, and how I made everybody's night, you know, Queen of Christmas. So I didn't become alcoholic right away, but I realized that I found something with alcohol that I wanted to have all of the time. I noticed that, you know, without alcohol, like, I was very quiet. I always cared about what people thought. I always wanted you to like me. I was just a scared person for a really long time, and I was angry, very angry. And I found myself on Monday being like, okay, I'm only going to drink on Friday. And I remember the entire week, I would constantly think about getting to Friday because I wanted to do that again. So I don't even remember what would happen from Monday to Thursday. I was just concerned about getting that next drink. And then Fridays turned into Saturdays, and then I was drinking because it was Flag Day or Mother's Day, even though I'm not a mother and there's really nothing to celebrate at all. And that's how it progressed for me for a really long time. I had a great job as a geriatric nursing assistant, and I really enjoyed, like, you know, taking care of the elderly. And eventually I gave that job up because it just didn't coincide with my party. I wanted a party, and, but yet apparently, like, the nursing home frowns upon you taking care of the elderly when you're hungover or you're still drunk. So they dismissed me, and you know, I kind of figured, I was like, you know what, maybe it's the relationship I'm in. He's a piece of crap. He doesn't treat me well, when he probably did treat me well. I was like, maybe if I move and get a whole new job, everything is going to be fine. Like, everything's going to be great. So I decided to move maybe like 30 minutes away because I was poor and really couldn't afford to move anyplace else. And at that time, I didn't have a guy to fund my trip for me. And I was going to figure out what I was going to do for a job. And someone was like, oh, you can be a waitress and a bartender. And I was like, what do I have to do? They're like, oh, pour drinks and be a shop girl. And you can drink. And I'm like, sign me up. Sign me up. So that's what I did for a really long time. I was a blackout drinker for 10 years. I don't know. That's what I thought was normal. I thought as soon as you started drinking, like, the idea was to get as inebriated as you possibly could, as much as you possibly could. And I didn't realize that that wasn't particularly normal. I started to realize that I may have a problem when I have all of my bosses sitting me down at a wooden table and telling me, hey, we think you might have a problem. And I had many reasons why I was drinking the way I was drinking. I mean, I was extremely young. I'm like, this is what you do when you're young. You party and you have fun. I can't tell someone that this is what I need in order to function in life, in order for you to like me, in order for me to see the world differently, in order for me to get through the day and just feel good about myself. So that happened a lot, where I had a lot of bosses sit me down and reprimand me and tell me that I had a problem. I was just convinced that they had a problem. They were old and they didn't know how to party anymore. So that's what I did. You know, in this program, I didn't realize like what my problem was. I have a physical allergy to alcohol. The moment that I put alcohol into my body, I don't know when I'm going to stop any. I don't know what's going to happen or when I'm going to start or when I'm going to stop up again. And I know that when I don't have it, I am a raging crazy person. I tried to quit drinking for a while to get like my bosses off my back so I wouldn't lose my job, or like maybe to make my sisters happy for like 5 minutes, or maybe the guy that I was dating at the time, like to kind of trick him into like not thinking that I drank so much, and then, you know, a week later, surprise, I'm crazy, you know. I'm a catch, I tell you. And but I noticed over that particular period in time, like when I tried to stop drinking, I was freaking nuts. Like I thought that if I stopped drinking, I'd be okay. But it got even worse, like that self-crappy dialogue that we have with ourselves. My mind was just going. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't stand to be in my own body. I couldn't look in the mirror. Like, I could not function. I was nasty to people. I was throwing stuff at people. I wanted to fight you. You could be a 350-pound dude, and I was ready to throw down. I'm like, let's go. Angry person. I didn't care. And I didn't know what my problem was, and I thought I was crazy. And people would be like, what's your problem? So I had a couple of excuses that I bought for a really long time. I'm PMSing, but nobody PMSes for 30 days, so that's out. I'm Italian, and we're loud, and we're rude, and we're passionate. And if you can't deal with that, then that's cool. You can't hang out with me. I had a lot of different reasons. And I'm young, and I want to party, and just leave me alone. You can't tell me what to do. And eventually that got me fired from a couple of jobs. You know, my bosses were like, we see a lot of potential in you, but obviously you can't seem to not drink. And when you do drink, you end up blacking out, or you walk out of the restaurant with all the money that you made that night, and you scare people, and you're driving drunk. And no matter what people said to me, like, I just would not stop. And it started progressing to get worse. I was drinking 7 days a week, and I wasn't showing up for work, or, you know, when I felt like I was going to be fired, or I would quit because I knew how to run this place. I've been here for 3 months, and you guys know absolutely nothing. I would move on to the next place, and, you know, the one place that I worked at, like, my alcoholism just, it progressed and got really bad, and people that were really close to me and really loved me said, listen, you know, people really don't want to be around you anymore. She's like, people, you know, I would notice that when I would, like, walk into a bar, I was a big shot because, like, the bartender automatically knew what to give me. I was like, oh, he either doesn't like me or doesn't want to deal with me for the rest of the night. So people used to, like, be like, oh, Danielle's here. And then I noticed when I walk into places, they'd be like, oh, Danielle's here. This is so bad. Like, we don't even know what's going to happen. And people got tired of babysitting me. And I started to remember, I sat in a bar stool one night, and I hadn't drank for like a week, and it was like Mother's Day, so I was like, oh, it's a holiday, I'll go out and drink. Mm-hmm. And I sat down, and I took that shot, and like, it just completely relaxed me, and I felt okay again. And I looked at a friend of mine, I'm like, don't you just love that when you take that shot, how just like everything melts away, and you just feel so better, and your brain stops moving around? Like, don't you just feel that release? And she's like, what are you talking about? She's like, no. She's like, my problems are still going to be there tomorrow. She's like, but it's nice to have a drink. I didn't know what a drink was. Like, there was never just one drink. The only time I had a drink was when someone was babysitting me or they were concerned, or I could show you that I could just have one drink and leave it alone, but yet I resent you the entire time. I saw the bartender pouring the rest of the liquor down the sink. God, that was terrible. And I remember it got to a point where I wasn't even like talking to my family anymore. I was convinced that my family was the problem. If your dad did this to you, you would drink. If your mom was like this, you would drink. If you knew what was going on with me and you lived my life, you would drink too. And you wouldn't give me so much crap about me drinking. Just leave me alone. And I blamed my family for a really long time. It got to a point where my sisters wanted nothing to do with me. I would call them crying because I needed money, and they got to a point where they would just stop helping me. I would always tell everybody, I'm a grown woman, I know what I'm doing, but yet I'm calling my 16-year-old sisters to pay my rent for me, when that's what was not going to at all. It got to a point where I started getting into other things, and that just fueled my alcoholism even more. Somebody was like, here you go, this will help you from not blacking up. Sign me up, I want to remember what the heck is going on. But alcohol is definitely my main problem here. You know, so my family wanted nothing to do with me. My mom was constantly calling me. I didn't want to let her know what was going on because it got to a point where I was ashamed of myself at that point, and I didn't want my parents to know what was going on with me. And I freaking hated them. Like, why would I talk to you about anything? It's your fault that my life is the way that it is. And eventually it got to a point where I was working at a place, and I started working with my boss, and you know, they gave me a bartending position. And I was trying to hide my alcoholism for a really long time, but then I found out you could drink behind the bar. So I was just drinking behind the bar, and everybody would be like, you want a shot? And I got angry one time. I'm like, never ask me, do I want alcohol? The answer is always yes. Just pour it and walk away. That's it. That's it. And so eventually it got to a point where I woke up one day and I realized that the alcohol was not working anymore. It was not doing for me what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to be my best friend. It was supposed to comfort me. It was supposed to make me funny and smart and pretty, help me sleep, help me not think so much crap inside of my head. It just wasn't working anymore. No matter how much I drank, like, it just got worse. It just got worse. And there's nothing worse than people being like, oh man, let me tell you what you did last night. It got to a point where it was so bad, like, I didn't even want to know what happened. I couldn't look anybody in their eye for a really long time. And I remember, what was it, my last night of drinking, the night before, I went out with this guy because I seemed to think that if I have a boyfriend and a really nice house and a great car and money in the bank, that I'm going to be happy and this is going to take care of all this crap that's going on inside of me. And that only works for a very short amount of time for me. Then I get bored and I spend all my money, and the guy that I'm with, I throw him to the side because I'm bored with you at this point. And I was like, all right, well, maybe if I get a boyfriend, I'll calm down. Maybe if I get married, I'll calm down. Maybe if I have a kid, I'll calm down. I can assure you that, yeah, that would have not happened, but at the time, that's what I thought. So I met this guy that my sister hooked me up with, and you know, generally on your first date, you're supposed to talk about, like, I don't know, like, what do you want to do in life? Where are you going to school? Like, what's your favorite color? Like, what's your astrological sign? I don't know. I guess that's normal stuff that you talk about, but, like, 5 minutes into it, he opened his mouth about saying, we ordered our food, and I was like, so, I was like, when do you see yourself getting married? How many kids do you want to have? Needless to say, he did not call me the next day. He didn't call me ever. And I was pretty upset because I was like, look at me. I am a catch. I was an alcoholic mess. So, of course, whenever I feel rejected or I feel like that I've been wrong, I go out and I get hammered. And that night I did. And I came to with, like, a bunch of police officers around me. And he looked at me and he said, this is what we're going to do for you. How did you end up here? And apparently the person that was driving me home was like, are you sure this is where you live? And my drove blacked out. And apparently I told them, I was like, man, I know exactly where we're going. Minneapolis is my city. I run this stuff. And apparently, like, I ended up at a dead end somewhere. And the neighbor saw and called the cops. They're like, it turns out you live maybe like 10 minutes away from here. We'll put you in a cab. And I don't really like anybody telling me what to do, as I've said before. And I'm not done drinking yet. I came to again, so that means that I'm going to continue. And the night is still young. And so basically I told him to do something that is physically impossible. And out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not going to say. But I told him to do something to himself. And the police officer didn't like it, so he decided to put me in handcuffs. And I remember sitting in that jail cell, and I was crying to death. I was soaked in urine because I peed myself, because that's what I do when I black out. I pee, and I'll probably pee on you. I R. Kelly'd a lot of people in my career. So I was soaking in my own urine, and I'm sitting in a jail cell, and I'm crying my eyes out, and I'm like, I'm 29 years old, and I'm sitting in a jail cell, and I peed myself, and like the guard is like walking back and forth to make sure that I'm okay, and so they were like, yeah, they were like, somebody is here to see you, and I'm like, who knows that I'm here? I haven't called anybody. They're like, well, you gave us your mom's number, and I'm like, I did? They're like, yeah, because apparently that's the only number that I memorized, so I'm like, fantastic. So instead of thanking my mom for coming to Annapolis at 3 o'clock in the morning to bail her drunken daughter out of jail, I was like, no, I don't want to go with her. I hate her. They're like, well, you can either go home with her or you can stay in jail. What do you want to do? And I was like, I'll go home with her. So they released me. And, you know, my mom was crying. She was like, please come home. I'll put you somewhere in those like places where there's like waterfalls and like you get go therapy and acupuncture like I've seen on TV. She's like, I'll do whatever you need to do to get you better. And I was like, no, you can't even take care of yourself. You're the reason why I'm like this, and I really hate you. And I slammed the door in her face. And yeah, that's really a terrible thing to say to the woman that brought you into this world and did the best that she could to make sure that you were a healthy, happy individual. So the next day, I proceeded to go out and get hammered, and I knew there was something up. I'm like, normally if people get into that kind of trouble, they're like, you know what, maybe I should stop drinking, and you know, but I needed to. My brain was going again. I couldn't stand to be in my own skin. I was ashamed of myself that I had gone to jail. So I got blacked out again that night, and I didn't know what to do. I was scared. I was like, the alcohol's not working anymore. Things are getting worse. Voices inside of my head are getting even worse. I can't stand myself. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And it turns out I had been living scared for a really long time, but that came out as anger. So there's the angry part of me, and I've learned that anytime you're angry, chances are that you're probably fearful, and I've lived in fear for a really long time. So I was working at this place, and I met my sponsor, and I told her that I was scared, and she grabbed my hand, and she offered to help me, even after I was extremely rude and nasty to her. She still offered to help me because that's what she was taught in this program, and she whipped out this blue book, and I thought it was a Bible at first, and I was thinking, I'm screaming in my head, I'm like, no, God hates me, we don't need church, like I've been through this before. Because I did believe in God, but I felt because of all the crappy person that I was that I didn't deserve God's love, and God had left the building a long time ago. But I learned through this program that God has always been with me, and I think about the situations that I put myself in, and God has been there, or I would have died, or something really bad would have happened to me. And she's like, I'm going to pick you up and take you to a meeting. And the entire time, the next day, I'm like praying, because I like pray when I feel like I'm in trouble, and that's the only time that I ever talk to God at all. I'm like, oh, I hope that she forgets, and I get text, and she's like, I'm on my way, and I'm like, no. So we ended up walking into this meeting, and we sat up in the front row, and she told me just to listen. I don't remember a lot from that meeting, but I remember that gentleman talked about, you know, how whenever he put alcohol into his body, he didn't know what was going to happen, and he couldn't stop. And I was, like, thinking to myself, I'm like, whoa, that's me. And then he told me how he lived a happy and joyous and free life through working the 12 steps and God and fellowship and service and God dependency and all that great stuff. And as soon as I heard God, of course, I was completely turned off, because I thought my relationship with God was completely askewed at that point. So, of course, you know, we walk out of the meeting, and I believe I said to her, am I an alcoholic? Like, I kind of smoke some green stuff. Like, maybe, I don't know. And she's like, it's up for you to decide whether you're alcoholic or not. And I knew deep down inside that I was an alcoholic. So I would like to say that I came into this program, I took all the suggestions, and I went through the steps rather quickly, and I was willing, and I would be really lying a lot if I said that. That is not the case. I sat in this program for 2 months, not really sure if I was going to stay, and not thinking that this program worked. Why? Because I wasn't doing anything. This program works if you actually work it. And I wasn't doing anything, and I thought I could fool my sponsor, but it turns out that you can't. She ended up seeing right through me. I'm like, all right, well, maybe if I go to meetings and I repeat all these mantras that they have, like, it works if you work it, and one day at a time, and let it go, and let go and let God. And I, like, repeated some stuff that I heard at a meeting, and I would spew all this stuff out to my sponsor, and I think she caught on to me. And finally, she told me, she was like, I love you and I want to help you. She's like, but if you don't start doing something, you're going to die and there will be nothing that I can do for you. I mean, 2 months into the program, like, I thought that if I went to school and became a counselor that it would magically heal me and I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. But yet I found myself, like, every day wanting to jump out the window of my condo. Then I was like, well, I can't really kill myself because I'm really bad with math, and if I mess up my angles, I'm not going to be able to kill myself right. So that was that. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to drink or if I wanted to jump out the window and break my neck. Like, I was just going crazy. And finally, she just called me out on all of my crap. She's like, you're not doing any work. And she's like, this is life or death, and you're going to die. She's like, so you need to do something about it. You need to start working these steps. You need to get a relationship with God. So that night after, you know, she gave me a good talking to, which is something that I really needed. I needed someone to put me in my place and not, like, sugarcoat and, like, you know how you go to people and they, like, you know, they, like, stroke you and be like, oh, it's okay, and, like, you know, let you feel like a victim. This woman was not going to let me do that. She knew what the deal was, and she knew that if I didn't do something soon, that something was going to happen, and I felt like something was going to happen. So that night I went in my house, and I finally got on my knees, and I was like, God, I was like, I don't know what to do anymore. I'm sick of feeling this way, and I'm really scared, and I was like, you know, my sponsor says that you can help me, so I don't know, I'm willing to do something. And started going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started taking all of her suggestions that she gave me, and things started to work out. It would slowly happen that I would be able to lay my head down at night and be able to sleep and not have anything on my mind. I started praying on a regular basis. I was reading the Big Book. One of the things that really attracted me to this program was that it's your conception of God. Like, God can be anything that you want it to be. And I was like, oh, my God is loving and kind and non-judgmental and loves me no matter what. Like, that's what my God is. I was told in this program that God is love, and I am a child of God, and we're all connected. Everybody in this program and anybody that you meet, we're all connected. And so I got my own conception of God, and I started meditating, and I was just doing whatever I was told to do because I didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to break my neck. I just wanted to, like, I just wanted to feel better. And she told me, she was like, she's like, your alcoholism, she was like, you know, it's a disease of the mind. She's like, it's a disease that only a spiritual connection is going to be able to fix for you. And she's like, and God and these steps and the fellowship and being of service to others is going to be able to help you with that. And so, like I said, I just started doing everything she told me, and I started going through the steps. Like, you know, I did that, you know, I just went through all the steps, and, you know, I did that personal inventory, and I learned a lot. Like, I definitely, like, complained to some people. I was like, I don't want to do my fourth step. I don't have to, like, relive everything in my life and rehash everything in my life. It's so traumatic because I'm a drama queen. And I remember being in the car with these girls, and they were like, listen. They were like, if you don't do this, you're going to go out, and you're going to drink, or you're not going to come back, or you're going to die. What do you want to do? And I'm like, have you been talking to my sponsor? Because you guys keep on saying the same stuff to me. So I wasn't going to get any. I wasn't going to get anywhere with these girls either because they were telling me the same thing. So I did my fourth step, and it wasn't as bad as, like, I was fearing that it was going to be. Like, I learned a lot about myself from my fourth step. I'm a fearful person. I've been living in fear for a really long time, and, you know, a lot of things that happen, like, they don't, I mean, I use them as an excuse to drink for a really long time, and, I mean, I was making myself a victim, and I hurt a lot of people, and I realized that it's not everybody else's fault, but in some way, I am the least common denominator. It was definitely me. It has everything to do with me. So I did my fifth step with my sponsor, and she's like, you know, she made me feel really comfortable, and she said, we're going to let God in now. And so we did, and, you know, we went through everything, and she's like, what do you think God would want you to do? What do you think God would want you to do? And there's a lot of prayer and a lot of forgiveness, and there's amends to make as well, you know, and there was one thing that I wasn't going to tell my sponsor. I didn't even like put it on my list because I was like, I'm definitely not going to say anything. And this was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. But before like we finished saying everything we needed to say, I was like, I got something else to tell you. And I told her. And apparently I'm not that special because she didn't flinch. She wasn't like, oh my God, that's terrible. You know, she gave me her experience with that, you know, and it felt really good to get that crap off my chest because I knew that if I didn't say something really bad was going to happen. I was going to go right back out, and I probably wasn't going to come back to this place. So I did that, and I continued on with the steps, and, you know, it was time for me to go out and make my amends, you know, and a lot of it was to my family, and I owe a lot of money, too, because I didn't pay my bills. Anytime I saw a bill come in the mail, I would just throw it away. That's what I do. I don't pay bills. I mean, it got to the point where I needed someone else to pay my drink bill for me. So I was like stalking. I'm like, all right, who's going to pay my drink bill? I wasn't paying any bills. I wasn't doing anything. I was throwing my bills away. So she sat down with me and we made, you know, my amends list. And, you know, she was really awesome about, you know, giving me some type of budget in order for me to start paying my money back. And, you know, I was calling people. I'm like, hey, I owe you money. And they're like, are you calling us? And I'm like, to give us money? I'm like, yeah, like, I owe you money. And people are shocked when you call to be like, hey, I want to pay you. Like, apparently that's a shocker for some people. And going out and making amends to my family. And I blamed my mother and my father for a lot of stuff. And in this program, I've realized that people can only do the best that they're given with. People try really, really hard. We put our mother and our father on this pedestal because the title mom and dad holds so much expectation, and I put so much expectation on my parents that I never really saw them for humans, and they may be going through some things as well. And I felt that they had let me down in life, and I came to realize that both of my parents are sick just like I am. And I went to my mom, and you know, I was told, you don't say I'm sorry. I mean, because God knows how many times I said sorry. Like, that's just played out. Like, that's the worst thing you can do. And I sat down with her, and, you know, as soon as I started talking and she heard the word amends, she stopped me completely. And she's like, I know what that word means. And she's like, you're not going to do this. And, of course, like, you're not supposed to plan anything like that. You're supposed to call and pray, you know, and I did. But I expected, like, in my head that this was going to be some great thing and like rainbows and unicorns were going to jump around and everything. And she wouldn't even let me finish. And she just cried and she was like, you know, whatever you're doing with your AA classes, because that's what she calls them, classes. She's like, just keep going. And she's like, just promise me that you're never, you know, you're not going to disappear again. She's like, I love you. And for a long time, like, I didn't know if you were alive or dead. And, you know, our parents, sometimes they blame themselves for our alcoholism. And it's going to take time to reassure them that it's not their fault. It has nothing to do with them. And, you know, to this day, like, I do whatever I can to help my mom. I go help her maintain her house or just sit down and have dinner with her. Or, you know, she's looking to sell her house, so help her sell her house. Like, whatever I can do on a daily basis. I mean, this program has taught me how to be a daughter, you know, and how to show up for people. I went to go make amends with my father, and that was really difficult for me because I really hated him a lot. And it got to a point where I was brought to my attention that I needed to make amends to him. And at first, that was really difficult for me to swallow, but your sponsor always has a way of putting things in perspective. And you take the suggestion, you're like, all right, I'm going to go and do it. So I sat down with him, and, you know, I talked to him a little bit, and he was like, wow, he's like, this is really great, and he made amends to me as well, and our relationship has never been better. Like, we sit around and talk about God and, like, what, you know, he does, you know, to maintain his spirituality with God on a regular basis, or how he takes time out of his day. And he asks me how my program is and about my life, and it's a relationship that I can't believe that I missed out on because I was so selfish and so self-centered, and I wanted to blame everybody for my mistakes. And then with my sisters, one amends was fantastic. Like, she and I continue to see her all the time, and she wants to be around me, and she notices a change. And I don't take any credit for that. It's all through God and sponsorship and working these steps and just doing what they tell you to do. Because if you do what they tell you to do, this thing works. You just got to be willing to stop being stubborn and just take some suggestions, you know. And with my other sister, it's a little bit different. I really broke her heart, and that amends really didn't go well. She pretty much told me that she hated me and it was going to take a really long time before, you know, whatever. So, of course, I'm devastated because it didn't go the way I wanted to go, and I call my sponsor. And she told me, she was like, Danielle, she's like, this is on everybody else's time. You know, like, you have to give them time, you know. So you're just going to have to be patient and just wait. The relationship I have with her now, it's the way that it's supposed to be. You know, I call her, I text her, I visit her. You know, she's very standoffish and really doesn't open up. So when she does open up to me, I keep that, you know, that information close to my heart, and I do whatever I can to help her. And, you know, for a while I was like, this relationship isn't working out the way it's supposed to, of course, because I have these expectations. And I'm like, everything is going so great with this one thing. And it's like, now life is not going to be perfect, but this program has taught me that you live life on life's terms. And you can live a great life and do the next right thing. And not everything is going to be perfect. You don't get sober and life is rainbows and butterflies. This program teaches you how to live life, how to grow up and be a daughter and a father and a sister, a partner, and just learn how to grow up. I mean, I'm 32 years old and I still feel like I am growing up. I still feel that way sometimes. I tell my, you know, my fiance, I'm like, I still feel like I'm growing up. And he's like, that's because you are. Because from the moment that I took that drink, I stopped growing mentally, physically, and spiritually, and I'm still learning how to live life. And the steps and being more God-reliant really helps that, and being of service to others. I never imagined in my wildest dreams that I would be so happy going out and, like, helping people, because I know that's what God wants me to do. You know, I was always very selfish, and I'm like, I'm not going to help you unless I'm going to get something in return, so what's up? You know, I've learned that in order for me to keep what I have and continue to grow along spiritual lines, that I have to give this thing away freely, not just in the program, but how to go to work and just make life easier for my boss and for my employees and be grateful for the money that I make. You know, I'm a server at a restaurant, and I've come to terms with, if I make 30 bucks, I make 30 bucks, and that's pretty much it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see little dollar signs walking into the restaurant, because anytime that I become financially driven, that's really dangerous for me, for an alcoholic to be chasing money. I learned that as long as I keep my recovery first, everything is going to fall in line. I've learned the more that I stay sober, the more that my spirituality and my God grows along with me. Like, I need to continue to speak out and continue to keep that close personal connection with my higher power, because that's just going to keep me sober one day at a time. And I've been searching for all of my life, like, why am I here? Like, what's going on? Like, what's the meaning of life? Like, all these crazy questions. And, like, I've learned that I'm here and I'm a child of God, and that, you know, I'm supposed to go out and help his fellow kids, just like he looks after me. And that's what I try to do on a regular basis. And as long as I'm doing that and doing the next right thing, like, everything is going to be fine, and I don't have to be so fearful about things. I don't work this program perfectly all the time. I'd be lying if I sat up here and said that I practice these principles in all of my affairs, and I'm so giving and so loving and so forgiving all the time, because that's just not the case. But I continue to take personal inventory, and I meditate, and I pray, and I go out, and when I find myself being fearful, I pray, and I go out and help somebody else. Because when I'm out helping somebody else, I'm less in here. And the less that I am in my head, the way better it's going to be. And life is really great. Like, I have the opportunity to go to school and be a good student. But yet I find myself being ungrateful sometimes, complaining about school. And it's like, think about the person that you were. Like, you probably don't even deserve to be going to school, and you get to go to school. And I mean, like, I was taught in meetings, they were like, you go 15, 20 minutes early and you stay 15, 20 minutes late. I do that in school too. Like, I show up to class 15 minutes early and talk to my professor and make sure I know her and she knows me, and I stay after class. And I don't know if I'm annoying to her because I'll show up at their office sometimes. I mean, I know your office hours, so, and I just want to get to know them and have a connection with you. And just, I really enjoy doing that. I have a fantastic way of being of service. Like, I get to do an internship. Like, amazingly enough, like, I passed a background check, and they were like, okay, we're going to let you help other people. And I'm like, that's fantastic. So I'm doing an internship at a place where, you know, we provide resources for the poor and the homeless population. Like, that's not normally me. Like, I would never do anything like that to want to help anybody. This program has showed me that I have to help others, and I actually want to help others. And it's definitely a great way to practice love and tolerance and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Because I've seen some things there, and I'll find myself getting a little bit judgmental of some of the clients that I see. And I have to take inventory on that. And it's nothing that they're doing. It's something that I'm doing and something that I need to change and how I think. Very recently, I got engaged. Somebody actually, like, wants to spend the rest of their life with me. Like, that's crazy, too, thinking of the person that I used to be. I used to be a terrible person. I would just rip through your life and treat you like crap. And somebody, like, actually wants to spend the rest of their life with me, which is still trying to wrap my head around. My relationship with my family is fantastic, and life can't get any better. And when life is not what you think it's supposed to be, it's because you're going through a little bit of pain, but as long as you have a little bit of faith, there's going to be some type of beauty on the other side. So I really think that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.